So it's asking the court to review the district court's restrictions on its First Amendment rights to use the Internet using the same method of analysis which the Supreme Court used.
And one thing I was going to ask you, because I want to make sure I understand, there were restrictions subject to the approval of the probation officer.
That's the restriction going forward. The restriction in the past, the restriction on the Internet is subject to the approval of the probation officer. But my argument is that approval depends entirely on whether that approval is required to enforce the other restriction.
I just finished asking a question.
Sorry.
I just want to make sure I'm on the same page. Right. It's a restriction on the Internet subject to approval of the probation officer.
Yes.
Right. And my understanding is he did not seek that approval.
No, he was told that he could not use the Internet.
I don't know what he was told. The restriction says you cannot use the Internet without the approval. And I'm not arguing with you. I just want to know the facts to make sure we're on the same page. I do have a question. I just want to make sure we're on the same page before I get to the question. So he did not, the restriction says you may not use the Internet without the approval of the probation officer. Yes?
That's right.
Okay. So as long as you follow me along and say yes, just say yes. If I'm wrong at some point, say no, and we can discuss it, okay? And your client did not go to the probation officer, seek to use the Internet, and was denied.
That's right.
So here's my question. Why is this argument ripe?
Because...
Why is this something we should consider?
Because the probation officer has no authority to grant Mr. Cardozo permission to use the Internet because the restrictions on sexually explicit material are so broad. And
how do we know that if he didn't ask for permission to get denied?
Because the other condition of probation, of supervision, requires that he not be allowed to view any sexually explicit material that the probation officer deems inappropriate. That's so broad that he cannot
say you. I mean, we don't know. The probation officer could approve. I mean, if you wanted to watch Wile E. Coyote, just an example, say, can I watch children's cartoons? You think the probation officer wouldn't have authority to do that?
The probation officer would have authority, but if you...
Okay, so you now agree that he has some authority, so this is not a question where he's being asked to get permission from somebody that has no authority. So now we'll talk about how much authority, whether certain things are included within authority and the discretion of the probation officer. And we don't know. So let me get back to the question I did ask, which is, why is this claim right? Why should we even consider it when your client hasn't gone and tried to take advantage of the avenue that the probation report, probation condition sets for him?
Well, there's two forms going forward. As he's on supervision now, there could be modifications because the probation condition changed for what type of material he was allowed to see going forward. Going backward, the condition he violated, he was prohibited from going to any place where sexually explicit material was present, which I argue would cover all of the websites that Packingham covered. All of those, Facebook, Twitter, all that material contains at least images.
He could have asked permission for those.
But she could not have given permission because the judge had already given them. Had already ordered that he not go to any place that had sexually explicit material, so she couldn't overrule the judge on what type of... She couldn't give permission to use the library because the condition on
regularly, right?
No, I mean, the other...
Did the probation officer tell you this?
No, it's the other condition of supervision is absolute that requires that he not go to any place where...
How do we know the probation officer wouldn't read that as a physical place and think that he could go to Facebook as long as he had some kind of monitoring? And maybe there's some kind of child monitoring that he could have had as well that would have filtered. I mean, who knows what the probation officer would have said?
Well, it is clear that the probation officer would not have allowed him to have obtained pornography.
But Packingham doesn't help you with that problem. But, I mean, Packingham might help you with the idea that he can make statements about arguably political topics or something, but it doesn't say anything about whether he can have pornography, does it?
Well, it's actually what he did. Well, I guess he is right. That's what he actually did do, which was go to the internet and obtain large amounts of naked images of women.
So how does Packingham help you with that?
Packingham establishes that intermediate scrutiny applies. If intermediate scrutiny applies to the internet and to sex offenders on the internet, and that if there are under intermediate scrutiny, the court should look at whether there are alternatives that would be reasonable. And in this case, the alternatives.
Well, but you know, your client committed a violation not because he downloaded the pornography, it's because he went to the internet without seeking permission, which is what the judges expressed. You know, your client did what you say the probation officer couldn't do, which is to defy the court's order. I fail to understand why it wasn't incumbent upon him to ask permission. And if he got a denial, then he'd have a clear, then he'd be able to argue about that. But why should we allow him to argue about something that he, a simple requirement that he simply failed to comply with?
Because the requirement was, her requirement to obtain approval.
I'm sorry,
the requirement. The judge's requirement that he obtain approval, the approval would have to follow the judge's instructions.
That's right. I mean, that's the way judges operate. They give orders, and their orders have requirements that you have to comply to. I can't imagine the other way of running the court system. If people were able to just say, well, I'm going to ignore it, because if you don't like it, you take an appeal. But why are you not required to comply with the judge's order? I mean, I don't mean you. I mean, your client, why is your client required to comply with the judge's order?
Well, counsel, let me suggest an answer for you, because I haven't heard it yet. Is it your answer because you have a facial, not implied First Amendment challenge? Right. It's a facial First Amendment challenge, so aren't you free to challenge it, whether or not the probation officer grants permission or not, because your client's view violates the First Amendment, particularly the total ban on use of the internet that would prevent it from having a smartphone with an Uber app on it.
Right, and that's
your answer.
It's a facial attack on it, but in what I...
Facial attack on a probation condition? I've never heard of that. This must be something that they only have in Iowa.
No, it's granted. This court granted one in Nurki. This court found that the probation condition was overblown.
That was a case where he was required to give permission of the probation officer.
In that case, he could have gotten.
I don't think the condition in Nurki had that. So the facial challenge here is, until we know what the probation officer would have given permission for or not, we don't know what the facial challenge is to. We don't know what this requirement limited.
Well, at least we know that
he would have to argue that the mere act of asking for permission is itself subject to a facial challenge. That is such a constraint on him that having to go to the probation officer to ask permission, it's sort of like if he, in the it's just an analogy. The medical ADA, for example, had to get the probation officer permission to have sex with his wife. And he would say, well, you know, that is so intrusive that you can make a fearsome challenge. But this is not that kind of thing, is it? I mean, saying you have to go to the probation officer and get permission to as to what parts of the internet you can go to, that can't possibly substitute a fearsome challenge.
May I answer anything about the time?
Yeah, certainly. You must answer. You can't
go away that easily. Your Honor, I do consider, first of all, the condition going forward that required, that only allows him to read or books or possess materials that contain descriptions of sexual activity that the probation officer deems inappropriate, is a facially invalid restriction because he would have to ask the probation officer orally for any email he wants to send or any message he wants to send to any of his wives. That is facially
I didn't see this in the brief.
That's in the other condition that he's also
banned to have access condition. What's there to do with emails?
He's also banned. The other part of the
he wanted to change the facts and not talk about another condition. That's fine. We're talking about the internet. If you want to stop talking about that.
Well, no, I think you can't separate the two.
Of course you can. You can say, you know, it's too intrusive to ask permission to send emails, but not to access internet at different activities.
Well,
if you want to switch to emails, we talk about emails.
The problem is that if he asks for permission, he has to ask for permission for material going out to the internet through email or Facebook or anything else. He has to ask his probation officer for permission for what he sends, and this is written material that he would send. He has to ask for permission, and the probation officer is entitled to deny access to possession of anything that the probation officer deems inappropriate. And that's whether it's internet or not. And that in combination.
And this argument was made to the district judge at the time the condition was imposed.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the district judge said that he has to get approval for every single email he sends out.
It's not that way, but because he's forbidden from possessing or.
You raise a problem to us. You're saying, look, the way this condition, we're in this condition, is it means he has to get approval for every time he sends an email.
Right.
Okay. I'm asking if you just made that argument to the decision. Did you say, hey, look, and the judge said, yes, you have to get permission for every email. Anything what happened?
He didn't answer it specifically. He just adopted the government's arguments. And that part of possessing or reading sexually stimulating material, my main argument is that this prohibits him from reading and writing about sexual topics. And since
he has to run it by the probation officer.
And it's subject to her unreviewable approval based on whether she thinks it's inappropriate.
I'm sorry, what's unreviewable about it? Why can't you go, if he thinks that she's being unreasonable, why can't he go to the back of the district judge?
Because the judge said the test is whether the probation officer herself feels it's inappropriate. So for him to, the judge can't overrule.
I'm sorry, the judge can't
overrule. Because he's delegated it to her feelings.
So if he decides to send in a recipe to a recipe website and the probation officer says no, you don't think that he can go back to the district court and say this is unreasonable?
He would have to change the condition, but not the way it's written. She could deny access to look at this video because there's an image of a breast on the statue of the public. That's
an awful lot of speculation about what the probation officer would do without having bothered to go ask. I just don't know why we should listen to you at all.
I think for the part of going backward, we know what she didn't approve, and what the judge didn't approve was any material that had sexual images. And I think that we know she wouldn't have approved it because subject to be allowed to be approved at the time.
And why, how would it be consistent with NERCI or other cases from our court to say that a sex offender can't have that limitation as a probation condition? I mean, I think you were going to this before when you were starting to say how intermediate scrutiny was going to help you here, but I'm not sure where this argument is going.
Because the images, if the images are constitutionally protected, as are just naked images, and he was not allowed to have that access, then it's a post-enforcement challenge is right for a challenge.
You may be right, but how are you going to win it? I mean, if some packing him is one thing, he wasn't on a supervised release or any other kind of continuing confinement. Your client was, and we have NERCI and other cases that say that sexually explicit material can be limited before when you're on supervised release, so I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, NERCI does say that NERCI narrowed it and excluded it only inappropriate forms of. So, for example, if he had gone and looked at naked images in museums, that would be.
Right, but that's not what your client did.
No, but it's very close, and the images are.
I'm so close to museums, it seems downloading porn from the internet.
These are sex displays.
Close.
Well, there's different
kinds. I mean, NERCI was concerned about museums and literature and things, but that's not what your client, that was not the basis of the offense. I mean, it would be different if you had a violation of supervised release for reading a book, but that's not what happened.
That's true, but what he did access was constitutionally protected material.
For people who haven't had a sex offense, though.
Yeah, there are lots of constitutional protections that you lose when you're on supervised release. See, supervised release is, you can statutorily stay in prison, or then you stay home. But the court has very broad discretion to limit constitutional rights, including they can come in and search your house for no reason, right? That's a pretty big intrusion. Most people don't have that. That's the consequence of being convicted of felony.
Yes, it's...
So what? Why is there any concern about us?
Because under NERCI, limited the restrictions to to sexually explicit material that the probation officer deems inappropriate. And at the time of Mr. Cardoso's violation, the conditions were broader than that. They applied to absolutely everything. So he was not... there was no way that he could have gone to a museum. He went to the internet instead.
But counsel, how do you get around this court's prior decision in 2005 at United States versus Animal that held it to obey on the use of the internet?
In that one, I think the problem is that in that case, the government and the defense both argued the case failing to notice it. They basically followed Reardon. Reardon was a plain error case, and they just adopted the government argued that Reardon was binding, and the court accepted that. And then in NERCI, this court later said, oh, no, we don't need to follow Reardon because it's only plain error. So I'm asking this court to go the same way that NERCI did, but on the internet, and so to actually reach the issue. That's all.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Matthew Thuson on behalf of the United States.
talking about some very long conditions. Are they really functionally even? I mean, so theoretically they are limited, but functionally are they so close to forever that it's strictly underpinning you?
So, yes, I do believe that they are functionally different, and that is because the second reason that distinguishes the patent here from a supervised release case, in this case in particular, is the fact that this ban applied to all sexual offenders, regardless of the underlying offense conduct and regardless of the history and characteristics of the offender. So, if you had an offender, if you had a supervised releasee who was subject to a lifetime ban or a lifetime term of supervised release, you know, then I think the court would be looking to the reasons for that lifetime term of supervised release, which would be based on the nature and circumstance of the offense, history and characteristics of the offender, which impacted him, and it had nothing to do with it. It grouped everybody together. It didn't matter if they used social media websites as part of their offense or the internet at all. So I do think it's substantially different. And in this case in particular, we have a defendant who did use the internet as part of the offense. And it's not a lifetime ban in this case.
So if he wants to have a cell phone, does he have to have it in airplane mode the whole time so that he doesn't inadvertently access the internet? And if he wants to, you know, use Uber,
or his cell phone doesn't exist in the internet. If it has cell phones and mobile access to the internet.
I didn't know they were still available, thank you.
How far are they?
Let's say he has a cell phone, he's got an Uber app. Does he get permission from the probation officer to be able to use the Uber app whenever he wants, or does he have to get probation each time he uses the Uber app?
I think we have to look at the condition as briefly, or how it would be interpreted, but if he were to go ask for this prior approval to get a phone with access to the internet and to access certain apps, maybe Uber or Lyft if he so chooses, he asked for approval from the probation officer, and if the probation officer were to say no, despite the appellant's argument, he could still go to the district judge under 3583E2 and ask for a modification to allow him to use Uber or Lyft, which in this case, as Your Honor's pointed out, he just did not do, so we don't know.
So I'm sorry, are you conceding that he's entitled to have a web-enabled cell phone?
I'm just
wondering, why couldn't the court just say you don't get one of those things? You get a regular cell phone that only makes phone calls. And if you want the ride, you call a taxi.
I think that's within the court's discretion, looking at the offender in particular. What we have here in this case is that Mr. Cardozo never asked. We just don't know.
Well, let's talk about the asking part. There's a certain aspect of the First Amendment and user censorship and having to get the government's permission for things. And there's something offensive to the First Amendment. And I realize he's a probationer, he's supervised release, so he doesn't get all constitutional rights. But the very fact of having to ask permission to engage in First Amendment activity is itself a burden.
I know
you do. Yes, I do. And I'm just wondering whether that can be facially challenged. So we say, look, I don't ask permission of a probation officer because the very act of asking permission to engage in speech is offensive to the First Amendment.
So yes, Your Honor, I do think the analysis is different. Like Your Honor said during the appellant's argument, is about like this facial challenge to supervised release condition. The challenge is that, at least in this instance, would be that it's the deprivation is greater than necessary, greater than reasonably necessary.
I'm not convinced that we can or should even consider the First Amendment challenge since he hasn't asked permission. I'm not sure it's even before us. The First Amendment challenge is really probably before us. But I'm just wondering whether he can raise, he hasn't asked permission in the sense he wants to restriction side of that is that maybe the very act of asking for permission is subject to challenge. Since this is First Amendment activity, the idea that you have to clear your ideas, your views, your thoughts with a government official is itself itself a First Amendment offense.
So, Your Honor, I would go back to the fact that this court, the Supreme Court, has repeatedly held that, you know, conditions of supervised release or probation can infringe on fundamental rights, and that is because, you know, a probationer or a supervisee, you know, is not entitled to the full liberty of, you know, law-abiding citizens or citizens who are out from under a criminal justice system.
Let's see the condition where it's say, look, every time you send out an email, you have to run it by the probation officer every single time. Could a probationer say, look, it's too intrusive. I'm not going to bother trying to ask and then, you know, object to, you know, as a probation officer says, you can't send out this email, you have to go to the district court and argue that that was an improper exercise of authority. What I object to is the idea that you have to do it every single time. It's just too burdensome. It makes the activity impossible. It gives a probation officer censorship over all my thinking, all my communications, and the very process of asking is invalid under the First Amendment. Can he raise that kind of challenge?
I mean, could he hypothetically raise that type of challenge? I guess he could and say that the condition, you know, has resulted, as it's being applied by the probation officer, you know, is unduly burdensome. You know, take that first. If the probation officer were to say that, which did not happen here because he never asked, could take that to the district court judge under 3583E2 and, you know, go that route. I mean, that is the avenue that a supervisor of EC has to challenge his conditions of supervised release rather than just going out, getting internet access to a computer, massive amounts of pornography, you know, especially a condition where it allows for probation officer approval, which this court has found, you know, is a reason that is not a greater deprivation of liberty than is necessary, which the court found it in Reardon.
Counsel, on the Antelope case, it seems to me that your opponent has a pretty difficult time getting around it. It's not enough to say, it seems to me, that Reardon was a plain error case. Antelope cites Reardon, but Antelope wasn't a plain error case.
Yes, Your Honor, same amount of time may I answer that?
I hope so.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that Antelope foreclosed this argument here because despite what the appellant said in his brief saying that Antelope didn't argue the Reardon case, you know, Antelope did bring up Reardon, and you can see it in the court's opinion, you know, not a lot of analysis, but it says, you know, Antelope argues that Reardon shouldn't apply because his crime involved less use of the internet and was less severe than Reardon's. You know, and then the court goes on to say, although there's some appeals to that nuance, the internet was nevertheless essential to his crime, and applying abuse of discretion upheld the pre-approval of the internet condition that is substantially identical to Mr. Cardozo's.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Beavis, you're out of time, but maybe a minute for a bottle if you wish to take it.
I think the problem with Antelope is that in Antelope, the defense never even argued that Reardon was only plain error. And so Chihuahua tonight is bound by Reardon. If it is not told that it can do something different, then it's bound by Reardon and the Antelope, the court.
But now we're bound by Antelope, right? Antelope was a possession only offense. It wasn't plain error, and we held it was okay. The restriction was okay. Well, how can we not be bound by Antelope?
Because in Nurki, this court held that Reardon wasn't binding, and so then that opens up the argument that Antelope is not. The other attack on Antelope would be that Antelope did not address the issue of whether applied the two separately. And our position is that you can't look at the approval of internet restriction by itself. It has to be looked at together with severe restrictions on the First Amendment rights. If there's no restriction on what type of material, then the approval of the internet would be fine. That's my argument.
Thank you. Okay, so I will say so.